We must use the time we have left to discover a way to capture Gamera and make him our slave. We will see how he was born. To do this, we will check his past by exploring his memory waves with a videotron.
Thank you. Welcome to Critical Mass. I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield. Thanks for tuning in with me. We've got an extra long episode today because I started running off at the mouth and wasn't paying attention to what I was talking about. So here's the rundown real quick. I'm going to be talking about the Lionsgate Marvel movies, animated movies. There's 8 of them on the docket, and of those 8, I've seen 6, and I just have a few words to say about the final 2, but I really have a lot to say about the others because I really like most of them. So there is that. Atomic Earth is on the website. Check it out. There are pictures, and you can download the rules. Game of Survival in a World of Giant Monsters. I've still got, I'm still working on getting the promo right. So when that, when I've got that ready, you'll be able to hear that. As for now, you can check it out on the web, or on the website, at criticalpressmedia.com. The audio drama has been put on the back burner because one of my actors got deployed. But, you know, these things happen. The Army did not consult me. And the short stories have just been delayed. I'm sorry about that. But, you know, that's the way these things go, I suppose. So, there are a few new things on the website. I'm going to be highlighting sections in my Critical Press Amazon, my Amazon store, in the Fanboy-arama is what I'm calling it. And this week, of course, I've got Marvel superheroes in animation with the Lionsgate films and some other stuff. So check that out to find you a good movie or two. And, you know, help Amazon, help me, help Amazon, help each other, something like that. But it's a good place to pick up some stuff. That, and I'm going to be highlighting audio of the week. Under right now, I've got it in the Tabber box on the website. If you open up the PodSafe Music tab, then you will be able to find my my PodSafe album of the week. This week is Cinecide is the name of the band. Manifestations is the name of the album, and it is a techno kind of not trance techno, but kind of an industrial techno sound. The album itself is available on internetarchive.org for free download, and or you can listen to it here on the website, and it's just some awesome music. I like it. I've been trying to correspond with the band, but I haven't had any luck, so for now I'm just simply enjoying their music, and I think you would too. I stumbled on it through a random Google of the word Gamera, which is the title of one of their tracks, and it's just killer stuff. Very, very cool. Makes good ambiance music if, you know, you have a game session or something, or if you're like me and you just, you know, you like to bang your head to the industrial techno every now and then. Or put it on while you drive, or whatnot. I like to write. When I write, I usually do it in complete silence. When I'm coding, I like music on in the background. So, there you go. Don't know why that works that way, but it does. So, check this out. Jesus Geek is still podcasting for water, and I'm still supporting that. So I'm going to let him tell you all about that. Head over to the Facebook cause and drop a 10 spot in there if you can. Every little bit helps. Plus, My Life Ministries is going to be doing a promotion for this as well, so you might check that out over at mylifeministries.org. And if you want more information about podcasting for water, go over to jesusgeek.info, and he can tell you all about it there. For now, listen to this short spot, and then we're going to talk about some movies.
Water. We drink it. We bathe in it. We wash our clothes in it. We need it to grow crops. We take it for granted, yet for 1.1 billion people in the world, clean water is a luxury. Unclean water threatens the lives of billions of people every day, but most of us listening to this don't know what life without clean water would be like. Something as simple as a public water fountain is an oddity to many people. We buy clean water in a bottle for $1, and that same dollar could give a person clean water for an entire year. I'm John Wilkerson, host of the Jesus Geek Podcast. Will you join me in raising funds to provide clean water to people who desperately need it? Please visit water.jesusgeek.info for more information on how you can change someone's life with just $1 a day. That's water.jesusgeek.info. Give water and give life.
Okay, gang, with the Marvel Comics virtually under boycott by me, I'm forced to get my Captain America fix somewhere else. So I have turned back to, well, back to my my back issues, of course. But I have turned over to Lionsgate Entertainment to pick up their animated movies. And they have 7 of these on the market right now, with an 8th movie coming up in the summer. And I'm just going to go through these one at a time real quick. But before I do that, I want to say something about all of them in general. Now, the movies, by and large, are tremendously well animated. And I'm not talking about just, you know, smooth, nice animation like you would see in the older Disney cartoons. I'm talking about photorealistic, traditional cell animation enhanced by CGI highlights at appropriate places. And it is very, very apparent that the people who know, who are making these movies, that is, LGM, Lionsgate Entertainment, in partnership with Marvel, formed a company specifically for the making of these movies. Their goal, by the way, as stated by Avi Arad, is not to make good superhero movies or good animated movies, but simply to make good movies. And because of the medium, their mandate, especially as evidenced in Doctor Strange, their mandate was to make movies that you couldn't do with an unlimited special effects budget. So what we're seeing here is they're really, when they set out to make these movies, they really set out to push the boundaries of what could be done with traditional cell animation. Now, the cell animation was chosen because the producers felt that CGI was not up to the depth of expression or fluidity that traditional cell animators were able to bring to the screen. So they went with the more traditional animation. Now, having done that, they also enhanced that with CGI effects, especially when it comes to the suits of Iron Man armor, the demons in Doctor Strange, the aliens in the Avengers, and so forth. Basically, whenever you see a advanced technology or otherworldly life forms, you're looking at CGI effects. And they are really, really blended seamlessly into the films. But the fact that they are CGI and the fact that they stand out from the traditional cell animation lends them an otherworldly and an unearthly quality that just kind of says, you know what, maybe they don't belong to this world in the case of the aliens or the elementals that we see. And in the case of the S.H.I.E.L.D. technology, especially, when we see them, and the Ultron technology, it's just something that is so far beyond the world around it that it really doesn't it doesn't have a place with the world we know. So there's a visual distinction there that is intentional and is designed to set those elements apart, make you pay a little extra attention to them, and think about their place in the film. Also, now I haven't nobody went into great detail on it on any of the interviews or special features I've seen. But all of these films are mixed in 5.1 surround sound. And I gotta tell you, these people, you know, they're really certain advantages to not having a boom mic on stage and all of your sound coming through one source. The audio on these features is mixed with care. The result is that we get a true 5.1 surround sound experience that you just really can't match, even in the theater. The example of this, so this really shines in the large battle scenes in the first Ultimate Avengers movie, and it really shines in the casting of spells and the other dimensional elements in the Doctor Strange movie. It just takes you out of the place you are and puts you somewhere else, and you know what? It's just fantastic. I am very, very pleased with both the look and feel of these films, as well as especially with the audio. Now, one of the other things that they have done with these films is they have taken, with the majority of them, and there are some exceptions towards the end, and I'll tell you about those, but for the majority of these films, they have taken traditional cel animation and blended traditional animation with CGI cell shading techniques. The result is a photorealistic animated film that is not CGI, that is not animation, but yet is obviously not real life. Photoreal doesn't mean that you're going to mistake it for an actual person, for a photograph of a real person. Photorealistic is a technical expression meaning that they use proper methods of lighting to light the sets from different angles and to produce shadows and depth of color and tone. So the photorealistic sequences, the photorealistic style is used in all of the films to one degree or another, but in the first four to spectacular effect. Now, this is outstanding because it is extraordinarily difficult and takes an extraordinary amount of time, which means it is extraordinarily expensive, which is why you don't see it used on traditional animation, which often has to be cranked out for most of a year, the weekly or, God forbid, daily shows that grace traditional television animation and, unfortunately, most traditional movie animation. In fact, you are going to be hard-pressed to find a similar photorealistic film outside of this set. Probably you're going to have to go all the way back to the Max Fleischer stuff on Superman. They experimented with photorealism when they made the Max Fleischer Supermans in the 40s, I believe. But even then, what they did back then is just pioneering the way for what they've done now, and it's spectacular. Alright, now, real briefly, I'm going to go over the movies. The first two I'm going to treat as one, and this is Ultimate Avengers the Movie and Ultimate Avengers 2, Rise of the Panther. Now, these are fairly standard superhero films. The first movie revolves around Captain America and the Hulk, and the other Avengers just kind of take a back seat to the development of these two characters and the role they play in the war with the alien Chitauri. The themes of the movie are really about this is kind of hard to pin down with both of these films. There's a lot of stuff going on in them, but there's not really a central subtext to pick out of this. They're not preaching about anything. They're telling good action films. They're telling good action films, and they're using this method and these characters to do it in. Now, the respect that they have for these characters and the respect that they have for their source material is very, very evident by the way that they treat the characters. And, you know, they really... The characters learn, the characters grow, you get to see some development, and you get just really everything that makes great action films and great superhero films. Next we have The Invincible Iron Man. Now, this one is something that you can really, really sink your teeth into. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and peg this one right now is one of my favorites. I'm debating between The Invincible Iron Man and The Next Avengers as to which one's my favorite. But in The Invincible Iron Man, what you really have a science versus sorcery conflict, as the ages-old Mandarin is getting ready to rise again, and it is up to Tony Stark to you know to keep him from happening and save the world and whatnot. But what really, really stands out about this film is the underlying commentary on predestination and free will, the elements of choice, and you know, the spirit of human determinism that that underlies what we do and why we do the things we do. The central premise of the movie is that many eons ago, an evil Chinese emperor named the Mandarin lived, and now he's dead, but he is prophesied to rise again when the ancient throne room, the ancient city that he founded, rises from its buried ruins. Well, either ignorant of or disregarding the prophecy, and actually Tony doesn't find out about it until much later. So it would, in this case, it would be wholly ignorant of this prophecy. Tony Stark decides to raise, you know, to fund an archaeological expedition to raise this city from the dead, you know, from the ground. And he uses high technology to actually raise the city on its foundations back to its original state. And in doing so, he releases four elementals, which have to hunt down the rings of the Mandarin. Now, unlike in the comic book, there are five rings instead of ten, which is fine. It fits in with the whole elements theme that they've got going. But in doing so, they, you know, he fulfills the first part of the prophecy. He denies a shipment of weapons to his people over there, causing, because they are plagued by terrorists, a political dissident group, which they don't know a whole lot about, they just know their political dissidents. And Tony denies a shipment of weapons to go along with the other scientific tools. In doing so, he causes his father to okay the shipment and send them, without Tony's approval, behind Tony's back. The consequence of this is that the shipment is then able to be intercepted. Now, because the shipment of weapons is intercepted, the militia that is trying to prevent the rise of the Mandarin is able to storm the team and take a whole bunch of people hostage, which causes Tony to decide that he needs to go over there and see to the situation firsthand. And because Tony Stark goes over there, the dissidents decide that a more effective method of preventing the Mandarin's release would be to force Tony to sink the city again back into the pit that it came from. The attack on Tony, of course, leaves him wounded. And so now, since Tony Stark is wounded, he has to build the Iron Man armor. And in the consequence, you know, in the result of him building the Iron Man armor is that he now fulfills the role of the Iron Knight, which is a role that is prophesied to conflict with the Mandarin. In after the Mandarin has risen, he will clash with the Iron Knight, and one will die. And again, this is all part of the prophecy, but none of it would have happened. There are no forces at work here saying, okay, you know what, these people have to do things this way, other people have to do things this way. There's no little spirits whispering and coaxing people into one decision or another. Every decision made by Tony or the militia, and I probably could have skipped right to this part, but every decision made by Tony or the militia in the process of living their normal lives in reaction to each other acts to fulfill a portion of the prophecy. A portion, and at any point along here, one of these people could have decided to do something else entirely, and that would have rendered the prophecy void. If Tony had okayed the shipment of weapons, then Rhodey would have had them available to defend off the attacks of the militia. If Tony had decided to stay home, the Iron Knight would not have ever have been formed, and so presumably the Mandarin could not rise. If Tony had not been wounded in an attack by the militia, the Iron Knight would not have, there would have been no need for the Iron Man armor, and so presumably the Mandarin could not rise. And somehow, I forget now exactly what triggered the release of the Elementals, but that was another decision on the part of one of the militia groups that did something to trigger the Elementals. And again, every step taken is a result of people who are acting of their own free will, either in ignorance of or in knowledge of the prophecy, sometimes in an attempt to aid it, sometimes in an attempt to thwart it, but every decision is made by human conscious choice without outside intervention, and it all acts towards the fulfillment of this prophecy, something that is really hammered home at the end of the film when the Mandarin is once again defeated, not by force of arms or your traditional superhero battle, but the same path of choices, the same path of human determinism, of human free will, that led inexorably to the Mandarin's rise, also leads inexorably to the Mandarin's defeat. And it's just really, really something to watch. So Iron Man, far and away, the deepest of the films, and the one with the most substance to it, in addition to be a slam-bang action film that no one need be ashamed of. All right, Doctor Strange. Once again, we have all the pluses that the other films employ. The beautiful 5.1 surround sound, the wonderful cell animation. But Doctor Strange, again, goes into a little more than just an action film with character development, which is basically what Ultimate Avengers 1 and 2 are. They are action films with some character development, and they're good films. I enjoy them. But there's not really this depth of meaning, this depth of substance that some of these other films have. Now, unlike Tony Stark's film, unlike The Invincible Iron Man, which deals predominantly with the theme of predestination and how it fits along with human will. The Doctor Strange really deals with forces which are outside of human will and our role within those forces. Over and over again, we hear talk about the Chosen One or He Who's Chosen or, you know, like that. It fits more with Chinese philosophy than it does the Tibetan philosophy that they're trying to sell it as. And so it would be more in place with the Iron Man film than it is here. But within the context of the film, within the context of the way they use it, it works well enough. And what we have is really a person in Stephen Strange who is at the grip and at the mercy of forces that he cannot comprehend and that he really has nothing to do with. Unlike Iron Man, everything in Stephen Strange's life is driven by outside forces, so that every choice he makes is almost literally made for him. Everything that he is supposed to do is going to be fulfilled by him. It can't really be fulfilled by anybody else, the taking of the mantle of Sorcerer Supreme. And it's not because of any merit within Strange himself. In fact, the Ancient One repeatedly refers to Strange's prowess with magic as a gift, and he has been chosen, he has been gifted. So Doctor Strange is really at the mercy of forces that are outside of himself, so that his own will, his own choices, not only inevitably don't matter, as in they don't prevent his destiny from occurring, but they make it harder on him as this destiny happens to him. So we have in these two movies, what we really have is the conflict between absolute determinism in the case of Doctor Strange and predestination in the case of Iron Man. I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. So with Doctor Strange, we've got a man, you know, acting as a pawn of otherworldly forces and dealing with magic. Now, magic in the Marvel Universe, and especially in the Doctor Strange movie, is really treated as yet another flavor of superpower. And this is seen in the fact that magic itself deals primarily with other dimensional forces instead of mystical, you know, mystical supernatural things, so that while the creatures that they deal with are acknowledged to be creatures that do not belong in this reality, the implication is that there is another reality to which they do belong, that they are, in fact, other dimensional creatures or aliens, creatures of a physical construct rather than a purely spiritual or a purely supernatural construct. One of the other things that this means is that these are creatures that whose mere existence has no moral implication, so that they are not the embodiment of evil or an embodiment of good as such. They are creatures, and their actions determine their focus. This is seen in both in the animalistic beasts that are unleashed upon the world, and in the actions of the sorcerers, and eventually the actions of their enemy, the Dread Dormammu. who is himself said to be a creature of magic, as if it were, as if we are, in contrast to us who are creatures of science, or creatures of the physical. He is a creature of magic. And that is, it doesn't describe his moral orientation, it merely describes the composition of his being, in much the way that we are said to be 85% water, or whatever it is. The few times that magic and the supernatural as itself are really addressed is during Stephen Strange's training, when the Ancient One has him doing repetitive tasks and such. And the instruction he gives him is that it's there because you say it's there. He says you perceived a wall to be there, and so it was there. You perceived the load of bricks to be heavy, and so it was heavy. If you perceive the load of bricks to be light, it is light. If you perceive the wall to be absent, it is absent. Well, you know what? This is really just hokum. Because repeatedly they use their perception of the way things are to impose an objective reality over other things. So while the Ancient One is sounds all wise and mystical, and you go, oh yeah, very deep, thank you, Guru on the mountaintop, it's really just a load of bunkum that has little bearing on the movie, but is there to give it a mystical flavor, if you will. So, you know, and the Ancient One himself simply doesn't, he doesn't perceive things out of existence or into existence as such. They are always dealing with specific abilities within a specific objective reality. So, be that as it may. Now, the heart of the matter between really the conflict, which, or not conflict, but because they're not really at odds with each other, they're explorations, we'll call it, of different viewpoints. Doctor Strange really explores the role of absolute determinism in human existence. Stephen Strange never had any choice. He was going to be the Sorcerer Supreme, and no other person could ever possibly fulfill that role. And it wasn't because of anything that he did or anything that he put into motion. It was decided for him by forces outside of his control without his consent. This, my friends, is absolute determinism. This is Darwinian in essence, and goes back long before Darwin. And it comes down to, you can sum it up by saying that there is no such thing as a random occurrence. When you throw the dice, that is not a random occurrence. What the number that comes up on those dice is determined by the irregularities in the dice manufacturer themselves, by the force with which you throw them, by the surface which they strike, and the number of times they bounce. All of these things are determined already, and so the outcome of the dice is actually a mathematical certainty. With predestination, you have something that is a little different. Tony Stark was going to be the Iron Knight. There was no way around it. He and only he could fulfill the role of Iron Man. But unlike Stephen Strange, everything in Tony's life is as a result of his choice. So that he chose to do action A, which yielded action B, and he chose to respond with action C, which yielded action D. He could have chosen differently, but he didn't. And the result of this is that he inevitably dons the Iron Man armor and comes into conflict with the Mandarin. Stephen Strange was never given that option. And in fact, those times where he tried to choose differently, where he tried to choose a path that would lead him away from Tibet, away from being an apprentice to the Ancient One, and away from the road to becoming the Sorcerer Supreme, forces outside of himself acted to put him on the correct path, so that none of these... His becoming the Sorcerer Supreme is as inevitable as Tony Stark becoming Iron Man, but is not a result of free will. It's a result of blind determinism. And that is really the essence of the conflict between predestination and blind determinism. See, predestination is often thought of as being in conflict with free will. That human will somehow stands apart from the rest of the universe. And frankly, this makes no sense to me. Every choice that you make is as a result of the influences of the world around you. However, unlike Stephen Strange, if you choose to do something that leads you away from becoming the Sorcerer Supreme, it will lead you away from becoming the Sorcerer Supreme. Tony Stark could have chosen not to build the Iron Man armor. He could have chosen to do any number of things that would have led to him not fulfilling this role. And yet, he chose to become Iron Man. The primary source where we, you know, the primary time where we see this really in conflict is in Christian theology, where you have two schools of thought that say, one, God chooses everyone, and whether you want to be a Christian or not makes no never mind to the big guy upstairs. He has said, yes, you're coming to heaven, no, you're going to hell, and that's just all there is to it. That is blind determinism. And quite frankly, it's not what the Bible teaches. That is the path that Stephen Strange is on, that puts human in the grip of forces beyond their understanding, beyond their control, beyond any anything that we really want to have anything to do with. And if that's the case, then quite frankly, I prefer nihilism as an alternative, because then at least the nihilistic view states that nothing matters, and I would rather absolutely nothing matter than believe that everything I do is chosen for me. That, by the way, is the essence of liberal. Crumb. Darwinian, Arminian, Calvinian. That is the essence of not, I'll look it up later. Sorry, guys. But it's the essence of a particular Christian theological viewpoint. Now, in the case of Iron Man, all of his choices were made of his own free will, with absolutely every opportunity to go in another direction and do something else. The fact that he chose to do, you know, to become Iron Man does not diminish in any respect the fact that somewhere in the ancient past, you know, somebody said, this iron, you know, the Iron Knight will rise and all these things will happen. Well, all of those things happen just as the prophecy said, just as they were predestined to happen, but they did so through the actions in harmony with the actions because of the actions of one person's individual choice. And this is really this is really where you're coming from with conservative Christian theology as epitomized by Calvinism. So that God says you will be saved. You know, I choose you to be my special people. And he does not really ever see fit to tell us, just as the Tony worked in absolute ignorance of the prophecy, so do we work in absolute ignorance of the fact that we have been either chosen by or rejected by God. What this means is that every choice that we make leads to one of those ends. And it is our choices that determine which end it will be. And if that sounds a little bit in conflict, don't let your brain explode. Philosophers have been arguing over this for 1,200 years. How can predestination and human choice act in concert with one another? Well, the answer, which is taught in the Bible and has been consistently rejected by both liberal Christian theologians and by non-Christian philosophers and theologians throughout the years, is really that there is no such thing as either predestination or free will as we understand them. The universe will work out in a certain way. It can only work out in one way. When you get to a crossroads, well, put it this way, when you get to a crossroad, you are going to turn left or right. You don't have a choice. Now, whether the end result of you going left has already been determined. You are going to go left. But the process by which you choose to turn left is entirely your own. So that the choice to turn left is made of your own free will, with every ability, at every point you still have the capability to change your mind and go right. So by this manner, God forces no one into hell and compels no one into heaven. Nobody is going to go to hell that does not choose to be there. And nobody is going to be forced into heaven that does not want to be there. And yet the fact remains that God knows the names of every person who is going to wind up in either place, because that's where he determined that they would go from literally before time began, before they were born. That's what we are taught in the Psalms. Anyway, that's not really the tack I wanted to go. I'm talking about movies. But I get so excited, especially with these two movies, the Invincible Iron Man and Doctor Strange, that I have to go off on these tangents, and simply because those are the concepts that these movies explore. Number 5 on my list is The Next Avengers, Heroes of Tomorrow. Now, this is not in the same chronology as The Ultimate Avengers. This is a separate story entirely, which is reflected in the character designs. I should make a note about the animation here. The animation is a little more simplistic. The characters are drawn with cleaner lines and less shading. The main characters are given larger features, especially like around the eyes, so that it has a slightly more anime feel to it. It's not really anime. It's not really American anime. It's somewhere in between. But the end result is to soften it up so that the movie is more accessible to the younger crowd, and in fact, this is aimed at a crowd at the preteen, you know, preteen crowd, where these first four movies really are aimed for the teenager and adult audience. The next Avengers is a fantastic story. It pits there was an apocalypse of sorts. Ultron attacked the Avengers and killed everybody. But the children of the Avengers have been in hiding for 13 years. Only now, Ultron's discovered where they are, and it's put up or shut up. It's do or die. I know this is fantastic. It puts, first of all, I'm a sucker for coming of age stories, and where children, teenagers, have to step into roles that are beyond them, or have to learn what those roles mean. Now, this is very, very tough to do without coming out and without playing it for laughs, as they do in every Disney film ever made. And it's tough to do without coming off as, yeah, okay, that could happen, as they do in the Chronicles of Narnia, where the children there are great war heroes, because that's what they're prophesied to be. No, the children of the Avengers are heroes because that's what's in their blood. They have this heroic legacy to live up to, in spite of the fact that their parents aren't here. And what really makes this movie for me is watching them deal with the absence of their parents and what that means to them. And it means something. It means something very important to each of these characters. And watching each of these characters step into the role that their parents have laid down for them is just a real treat. But what makes this film excellent rather than just good is the fact that you have characters, teenage characters, who have been thus far denied the protection of a parent, the protection and tutelage of a parent. Now they have Iron Man, who has been keeping them safe and been hiding them all this time. But that only goes so far, especially as it has not dealt with the root conflict, which is the fact that their parents was denied to them by Ultron. You have these characters, and they are faced with an opponent, with a conflict that is literally beyond their ability to deal with it. Let's face it, the regular Avengers have had trouble dealing with Ultron in the past. And for the kid Avengers to take on Ultron, this is ludicrous. This can't happen. They're kids, they do it anyway, and the results are predictable. They get stomped on, they get punished pretty badly for doing so. And the result of that is that they have to seek a solution along the proper channels. What this provides is an opportunity for them to remain kids without having to, they don't have to fulfill the role of an adult, while the adults in the film are given the opportunity to fulfill roles that they have failed at in the past. And the kids are given the opportunity to see what it means to be an adult hero, and they're given a little taste of that, and they are given the opportunity to step into the beginning of that role. Not the fulfillment of it, but the beginning of it. And that's just something that is fantastic. Now, with the simpler animation on this one, they still have the blend of shading and CGI that makes all these films spectacular. But it's toned down quite a lot. There's not as much shading on this. The Ultron CGI effects are pretty obvious, and pretty obviously indicative of Ultron. And so it doesn't really stand out. They're not used to the great effect that they were in the other films. And there are one or two places in the film where it was obviously handed over to second unit animation. Say, here's the storyboard. The sequence is unimportant. Flesh it out. And the consequence of that is that the film suffers in one or two spots visually. But it's only one or two spots, and it's very brief. So it's still a movie worth having. Hulk Versus was last fall's release to go along with the other Hulk stuff, and it was Hulk Versus Thor and Hulk Versus Wolverine. And I gotta say, there really isn't a lot, you know. As with the Ultimate Avengers, there's not a whole lot of subtext. There's not a whole lot of subtext in those films. You get exactly what you think you're going to get, Hulk Versus. Yeah, so you get to spend the first film watching Hulk beat up people on his way into Asgard, and then he fights with Thor, and there's, you know, the fight sequences in that film are just absolutely brutal. I mean, the landscape suffers so much in the conflict between Hulk and Thor. And then when it's Wolverine's turn, it's oh my gosh, it's so intense to watch Wolverine cut loose with those claws, and you see the blood and the wounds on the Hulk without going into a great deal of gratuitous gore. It was enough that I was saying, oh my gosh, did they just do that? And in fact, there's a scene in there where Wolverine carves up security guards, armed people who are trying to kill him, don't get me wrong, but he carves them up, and I thought that was a bit intense for an animated sequence that is rated PG-13 and probably going to be seen by my kids, who are, 5 and 8. But, I don't feel too bad, because after that sequence, my 5-year-old turns to me and he says, "Dad, he killed those men." I said, "Yes, he did." And he thought for a minute, and he turns back and he says, "They were trying to kill him, too." I said, "Yes, they were." So, it's a movie where force is responded to with similar force. And if you're going to take anything away from it, that's really all that you're going to take away from it. Because the essence of the film is Hulk smash, Thor smash, Wolverine slice. They were pretty good. They're standard beat-em-up fare, not very long, less than an hour apiece. And they're both on the same disc, which was good. The Wolverine film was a little more entertaining than the Thor film, I thought. But this was really only because of the presence of Deadpool, who put the merc with a mouth, who put that comic bite into things that just really have me going, "I shouldn't be laughing, but I am." So, Hulk Versus, pretty good film. It's a rental. Now, all of these films so far have had just fantastic special features, including first looks at the next film and, documentaries about what's behind the scene and whatnot. And that, that's just been fantastic. The first five films are worth it for the special features as well. Don't just watch the film and go back. Watch about the making of the Ultimates. Watch the trivia track on the Ultimate Avengers. I wish they had done more of those. Listen to the commentary that Stan Lee has on what it means to, what it means to be a magical superhero, and J.M. DeMatteis talking about the Doctor Strange's quest for spirituality reflecting his own. It's just fantastic stuff. Now, finally, the seventh and eighth film I haven't seen. I haven't seen number seven because, quite frankly, after watching the first look on Hulk Versus, I'm gonna give it a pass. And the eighth film because it's not out yet, and it's going to be Thor. I want to say Son of Asgard, But these things are likely to change. Thor, Son of Asgard, looks fantastic. I watched the first look, and it looks to... We didn't get to see any finished sequences, or not very many finished sequences. So what it looks like is it's the same style as the next Avengers, where they cut back on the cell shading and scale, you know, they scaled back the depth of the animation and went for cleaner lines. However, unlike the next Avengers, Thor, Son of Asgard, looks to be more for the teenage audience rather than the preteen audience. And so I'm excited about that. I'm looking forward to it. The other one, Wolverine and the X-Men Heroes Return trilogy, has, with the character redesigns and with the little bit that I got from it, it has all of the earmarks of being the first three episodes of a new television series, rather than a movie in its own right and in its own continuity. And I'm not encouraged by the fact that Lionsgate partnered with Nicktoons in the production of that film. Plus, the animation sequences that we got to see were sloppy and choppy and just really reminiscent of badly done Cartoon Network Saturday morning fare. So I'm not looking forward to it. I could have gotten past all that, because I have with other films which I really like the content of. But the nail in the coffin was that when they were talking about reinventing the characters for the movie, they weren't satisfied with reinventing the characters, with reinterpreting the characters rather for a next generation. Such as they did with the X-Men animated series in the 90s and then in the new millennium with X-Men Evolution. Both of those were very, very good series, by the way. No, this time they have taken the characters, they have broken them down in ways that at times made no sense at all, and then rebuilt them from the ground up so that you have Cyclops as a broken-down loser having lost his mentor and girlfriend, and just absolutely rejecting, rejecting reality. You have Wolverine, who is thrust into the role of mentor and teacher, against his will, and then you have a whole bunch of other characters who have been redesigned and reimagined for the new series. And from what they said on the first look, they are looking forward to doing things with these characters that maybe hasn't been done before. And we're going to recreate these characters in ways that will just make the fans sit up and take notice. And you know what? This is almost always a recipe for disaster. Good stories don't come from recreating your characters. They come from taking established characters with, or characters with iconic archetypes, and putting them into situations and seeing how they come through those situations. The result is I am not hopeful about it. I will probably get it from the library once the library gets a copy, as I don't even intend to waste a Netflix slot on the film. So if I'm wrong, you'll hear about it. If I'm right, you'll likely hear about it. But as it stands, I've got five fantastic films. Well, we'll call it three fantastic films in my hands, and three films that are pretty good action films. And those fantastic films are The Invincible Iron Man, Doctor Strange, and The Next Avengers. And then the others, if you just want a pretty good action film, some good beat-em-up stuff, get Hulk Versus, because there's little there other than Hulk Smash. And quite frankly, there's not as much of that as I would have liked to have seen. The stories really aren't about the Hulk. They're about Wolverine, and they're about Thor, which once again tells me that the creators didn't have a grasp on the character. And if you want movies that are good movies made properly, get Ultimate Avengers the movie and Ultimate Avengers 2 Rise of the Panther, both solid, solid movies with a good degree of rewatchability, awesome special features, and just beautiful to look at and listen to. So, there's something for your summer theater, and I'll hopefully hear from you guys in about a week. You can find all of these for your convenience over in the Critical Press Amazon store. There's a link right on the website. Just click over that, and this is going to be the fanboy-orama for this week, is the Marvel Heroes in Animation. So there will be some good stuff there. I'm going to dig up some other stuff and see what I can't find in the way of classic Marvel animation and just good Marvel animated heroes. And so find you something good to watch. And I don't know whether I should close with Excelsior or Make Mine Marvel.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.